From the city of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, this most incredible program. Next hour, terrestrial reptoids, creatures living way beneath us with John Rhodes. This should be a classic Coast to Coast show. Now, don't forget, circle your calendar for this Friday. Free StreamLink weekend begins. You can read all about it by going to coasttocoastam.com. It happens to be Friday the 13th as well, so when we have open lines, who knows what's going to happen. But take a look at the graphic that our staff has put together there for the free StreamLink weekend. I think it'll give you the feeling of what's ahead for us this weekend. Well, thank you, Sprint. For those of you who are Sprint customers who seem to call too many times to the company and make unreasonable requests, Sprint Nextel, which recently launched an advertising campaign to attract new customers, is going to disconnect more than 1,000 subscribers for calling its customer service lines way too often and making what the company calls unreasonable requests. The number three U.S. wireless provider with 53 million customers, soon to be 52,900,000, well, said it started sending service termination letters on June 25th. They said the cancellations involved about 1,000 to 1,200 customers who had called the company about 36 times a month, just making all kinds of what they call unreasonable requests. So they're just dumping them. They're going to give them about 30 days to transfer their phone numbers to other providers. The director of the National Hurricane Center has been temporarily reassigned 4 days after many of the center's employees called for his removal. More than 20 of Bill Prozena's nearly 50 employees signed a letter urging federal officials to simply dismiss him. They claimed that he had damaged the public's confidence in their forecasts by repeatedly and publicly criticizing the federal government for not providing enough money, particularly to replace an aging weather satellite. The staff members said that he misrepresented the problem with the satellite, and they were worried the consequences would hurt their forecasting abilities. Food and water shortages fueled in the future by global warming could spur conflicts and even wars over these essential resources, according to authors of a new study. History suggests the controversial idea might be right on track. Changes in climate, such as temperature and rainfall, can significantly alter the availability of crops, livestock, drinking water, and they say resource shortages could in turn prompt people to turn to war to get what they need to survive. A new study detailed in the August 2007 issue of the journal Human Ecology suggests that this was the case in the past. The authors reviewed about 900 wars fought in China between 1000 and 1911, and they found a correlation between the frequency of warfare and records of temperature changes. Listen to this one. The boost in troop levels in Iraq has increased the cost of war there and in Afghanistan to $12 billion a month. And the total for Iraq alone is nearing $500 billion. All told, Congress has appropriated $610 billion in war-related money since the 9/11 terror assaults, roughly the same as the war in Vietnam, and those were in older dollars, of course. Iraq alone has cost $450 billion. The head of the U.S. forces in Iraq has told the BBC that fighting the insurgency is a long-term endeavor, which he says could take decades. I don't think we can afford to spend that kind of money for decades. I wonder how many people who supported the war initially would support it now based on what's happening. A little hero is dead near Smithfield, North Carolina. Six-year-old boy, 6 years old, drowned in his grandparents' half-drained pool while saving his three-year-old sister. Remarkable. He died Saturday at his home. His younger sister, Alona, told family members that James saved her by pushing her to the shallow end of the pool where she stayed in just over a foot of water. She said, "He just kept saving me, and saving me." James apparently lost his footing and slipped below the water as he was pushing her, and he died. The first skin patch to treat the dementia that can plague Alzheimer's patients has now gained federal approval. The drug in the patch is the same as now available in capsule form, but provides a regular and continuous dose throughout the day. Since the drug enters the bloodstream directly, the patch also eliminates some of the gastrointestinal side effects associated with the drug when swallowed. A single pill appears to hold promise in curbing the urges to both smoke and drink, according to researchers trying to help people overcome addiction by targeting a pleasure center in the brain. The drug already is sold to help smokers kick the habit. New but preliminary research suggests it could gain a second use in helping heavy drinkers quit, and they think that they might also be able to use it for people who have an addiction to gambling. A drunk German who fell asleep on a railway line did not wake up, even when the train ran over him. Amazingly, this 23-year-old man was unhurt because he was sleeping right between the rails at a station in Berlin. He was pulled off the line by railway workers, simply saying, "I have no memory of lying down on the tracks, but I was lucky enough not to have put any of my limbs over the tracks." I guess so. Listen to this bizarre story. I mean, this is news you don't get anyplace else. A man's smelly feet sparked a police raid in Germany after neighbors reported the smell of a rotting body. Police broke into the home of this 41-year-old, found him asleep in his bed. Neighbors who had not seen him for a week believed he had died because of the rotting odor. Police said, no, it wasn't that. It was coming from his feet in a pile of unwashed socks. I can't believe it. Clark McClellan, by the way, was the ground test astronaut for part of the space shuttle fleet. And he writes a fascinating story in a book he's trying to publish about Dr. Wernher von Braun, the father of our space system, of course. Listen to this story. It has to do with Roswell. He says, Dr. von Braun explained how he and his unnamed for now associates had been taken to the Roswell crash site after most of the military were pulled back. They did a quick analysis of what they found. He told me the craft did not appear to be made of metal, as we know metal on Earth. He said it seemed to be created from something biological, like skin. I was lost as to what he had indicated, other than thinking perhaps the craft was alive. The recovered bodies, he said, were temporarily being kept in a nearby medical tent. They were small, very frail. They had large heads. Their eyes were large. Their skin was grayish and reptilian in texture. He said it looked similar to the skin texture of rattlesnakes that he had seen several times at White Sands. His inspection of the debris had even had him puzzled. Very thin, aluminum covered, like silvery chewing gum wrappers. Very light and extremely strong. The interior of the craft was nearly bare of equipment, as if the creatures in the craft were part of a single unit. And according to Clark McClellan, who's a ground test astronaut for the space shuttle fleet, talking about his conversation with Wernher von Braun many years ago. In a moment, we're going to be talking about alien life and why several people believe that it exists. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, a couple guests for you. First of all, Brandon Scott. He is a versatile actor that has starred in dozens of television series and films, a well-known magician, illusionist, who interweaves storytelling with magic, quantum physics, metaphysics. Brandon has been involved in paranormal investigations for most of his life. Paranormal researchers and UFO investigators utilize his knowledge of magic and illusion to help determine whether a phenomena or claim is real or a hoax. He's a member of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network here in L.A., several private paranormal groups. And he just has a film out called Alien Secrets, a feature film loosely based on his journals as a UFO investigator, Brandon Scott. Hey, Brandon, how are you?
Hello, George.
Good to talk to you.
I know. Good to talk to you again.
And, of course, William Altshuler has a Ph.D. in astronomy from the University of California at Santa Cruz. He received a B.A. in astronomy at Harvard College. He has extensive college teaching experience in sciences, calligraphy, Lippmann photography, energy conservation, solar building design. He's been an author and editor of the following: The Microverse, UFOs and Aliens, First Contact, The Ultimate Dinosaur, Are We Alone in the Cosmos, and Science of the UFOs. Hello, William.
Hello.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
It's been a long time since you've been on the program, hasn't it?
Yep.
Very long. Okay, Brandon, you, the astronomer, we're both together. You're still interested in UFOs, Mr. Scott, huh?
Oh, yeah. More so every day.
How come? What's up?
Well, there just seems to be an acceleration of phenomena occurring, and it's becoming even more visible in my residential area. It used to be remote places, and now we're finding stuff like outside in the backyard.
You decided, with everything that's been going on, Brandon, being an accomplished illusionist, but also paranormal investigator, to put all this together with alien secrets. So tell me about that concept, because it has won some awards now.
Yes, it has. The Best Feature Film. And if Alien Secrets is a narrative film partially shot while I was actually doing a documentary on alien-human hybrids. And it's a sci-fi and a reality show in an epic portrayal of one man's search for alien-human hybrids and his drive to save humanity. A lot of people are referring to it as the Spinal Tap of UFOs with a touch of truth. And it is based on my real escapades as a UFO investigator. And in a way, I kind of play a parody of myself as I explore the UFO subculture and navigate my way through the world of Hollywood celebrities and renowned experts in the UFO community, and actually meet people claiming to be abductees and alien-human hybrids.
Okay, now, William, as an astronomer, in a lot of your work, of course, a new one, The Science of UFOs, an astronomer examines the technology of alien spacecraft, how they travel, and the aliens who pilot them. How did you get interested in this, William?
I got interested in childhood, basically because when I was growing up, the space program was just getting underway. 1957 was the International Geophysical Year in which the first satellites were launched. And actually, even before that, I started to get interested in astronomy and started reading books on astronomy. And at the same moment, some books were published by a chap named George Adamski.
Oh, yeah.
Published a book called The Saucers Have Landed, and it was an interesting text with a number of photographs that seemed to show flying saucers. And for a while, I was quite convinced that all of that must be real. And then as time went on, I gradually became convinced that that wasn't the case.
Scanning the heavens, have you ever seen anything unusual?
Yes, actually. I one summer when I was in college, I was working at the Adler Planetarium in Chicago. And at the end of the day, my work day, I walked out just at dusk, and I happened to look back at the planetarium over the lake, and hanging in the sky was a brilliant white disk, not moving and not making any noise, about the same size as the full moon. And I stood and looked at it. It was completely unlike anything I'd ever seen. And gradually, I decided that it must, in fact, have some explanation that was completely irrational. And I went back into the planetarium, inquired at the switchboard, and it turned out they'd had loads of phone calls, and I checked around, and this was a balloon, a cosmic ray balloon experiment launched by the University of Chicago, moving at the time very slowly and brightly illuminated by the setting sun. And later that summer, I was out at night, actually, with my own telescope observing, and I looked to the south towards the lighted horizon of Chicago, and saw right near the horizon a wavering, traveling, luminous ribbon of light. And I'd never seen anything like that before. And I figured since it was south of me, maybe near Chicago, I again would try the planetarium. And sure enough, they'd heard about that. And it was a flying advertisement, illuminated, being dragged by a plane too small and faint for me to see even with my telescope. And at such a shallow angle that I couldn't see that there was lettering in it. Just the ribbon of light.
I just came back from Roswell, New Mexico, where Brandon's film Alien Secrets premiered on a special one-day engagement. And I've got to tell you, it is fascinating to talk to these UFO researchers face-to-face. They've been on the program before. Because something, I think, William, really happened there.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I heard that program and how that was important for you to actually see them eye-to-eye, and that's when you made your determination.
Yes, absolutely. I you could see it in their faces, and in the people who have come forward, who have talked about their fathers and what they told them. You know, dads don't lie to sons. Dads don't lie to daughters about things like that.
And this is one of the things that I have picked up when interviewing people who've felt that they've been abducted or felt that they were hybrids. It's when you see them eye to eye, and when you talk to their relatives, their brothers, their mothers, their grandparents, and you see the honesty in their experience.
Is that what's the most convincing for you, Brandon, this belief system, or is there something else there that you uncovered?
Well, it's part of it. I mean, I myself have been eyewitness to unidentified flying objects that I can't explain. And I started, as you mentioned, as a magician detecting hoaxes. And some of them were not hoaxes. You know, they were unexplained phenomena. And then I've had a lot of people that, you know that I'm into this. Regular people, families that I've known for years, and they'll be at a picnic or a birthday party, and they'll catch something on tape and run it by me. I run it by some experts, and it's not natural phenomena or military planes. But from the fact that there is a potential spacecraft to abduction is a big leap. And then I'm very interested in what William also has to say about hybrids. I've, over the years, had a chance to interview hundreds of people, and a lot of times this happened before the internet and in remote countries where all of this had not quite gotten popular yet, and their stories were triggered many times by a conversation that I had. They had no idea that this even existed, and I would witness entire families suddenly starting to recall collective experience and discovering it emotionally for the first time. That, like, sent chills down my spine as I heard detail after detail and things that they were sharing about smells and things like that. That later on, when Whitley Strieber's book Communion came out, there was a lot of clarification for a lot of these people. But before that, they weren't like, there was no reference. There was nothing written about this. And that was very convincing to me. And regarding one situation where I took someone to a Christmas party, and I knew for a fact she did not know the host. They locked eyes for the first time, and they started remembering an experience on a ship. They started like rapidly sharing with each other what the surroundings were, what they were being done to each other.
Incredible.
Like, it was amazing.
Incredible. And William, but your belief system now, you believe that there's been a genetic mix here between an alien and human, don't you?
No, actually, no. The opposite. I have to say I'm extremely skeptical of all of that. I have the sense that there is a fairly significant number of people who believe what they say about this, and their psychological reality is pretty strong for them. But I doubt that it coincides with physical reality, and there are a number of reasons for that, some of them pretty obvious, I think. If you think about the biochemical basis of life on Earth, it's all, as far as the metabolism goes, how we burn and use energy, carbon-based. I think pretty much everybody knows that. There is the possibility sometimes mentioned in the literature that some other element other than carbon might serve as a basis for this, the principal one being silicon because it has the same outer electronic structure, in other words, similar chemistry to carbon. But as I and a few other people have argued, there's a whole lot more silicon on Earth than there is carbon, and if silicon was to be the basis of life, then it seems like we should see it. Though it should be remarked, there was just a news story within the last week that NASA is now starting to say they're going to try to broaden the definition of life they're going to search for when they look for life elsewhere. And it's entirely possible, though no one's really found a particular mechanism or molecule that looks likely, that in rather different physical conditions, for example, a place that's not a liquid water planet like the Earth, someplace, for example, where there's liquid methane or liquid ammonia, like some of the moons of the outer planets, that some other set of molecules might serve. Though I've seen arguments that carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen would serve here, might still serve there.
So you don't believe, though, that the people who claim that they see their little, altered babies or anything like that, you don't think that's happening?
I don't think that it's anything to do with aliens. I think that if you want to make the argument that alien chemistry is similar to ours, which it might very
which
well
it might be, yeah.
It might be at least on planets that have liquid water like Earth does and an oxygen atmosphere, you'd still have to ask whether their metabolism, the molecules that burn and use energy, their muscle structure, their DNA, would be identical to ours.
All right. If you want more information on Brandon Scott's incredible film called Alien Secrets, get up to his website, aliensecrets.com, and they're all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment. Hey, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Pacific time, we'll have our StreamLink chat. So come on board. It fills up awfully fast, but it starts at 8 o'clock. For those of you who are StreamLink members, we'll have open lines for you now when we come right back. Just you and me right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to the open line edition of Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Let us go to the phones now. We'll go to our wild card line. Start it off. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Casey. I'm
hey,
calling
Casey.
From Tennessee.
Yeah, what's up?
Good to talk to you again. Hey, I wanted to kind of do a little test here and see if you would like to ask me a question, if you would play along, or if you would like to try to ask me a question about any problem in the world, whatever problem that you see facing us, and you just think of it now and ask me what I would do to solve it, whatever the problem be, and I think I can give you the answer.
Okay. Let me think here now. What problems would there be? Okay, how about this one?
Okay.
How would you solve the situation in Iraq, which seems to be lawless and out of control?
Okay. Let me just say that, first of all, on military matters, I hesitate to assert anything because it's such a touchy subject because I'm not in the military. But if it were up to me, then I think what I would do is I would start conscription with the young people of Iraq, which, in other words, I would make it required to serve in the military. I would believe I would start making the schools much more secular and require them to have military schools, and that would allow for them to start having a sort of unity beyond their religious divisions. And then also I would probably identify all the people there and make sure they're truly Iraqi citizens. I'd go to each citizen and make sure that they had to had some sort of identification system that would uniquely identify them, and anyone that wasn't appropriately identified would be eliminated from the country by being, I guess, deported or put in prison if they were, you know, if they were criminals. Another thing that I would do is I would increase the number, dramatically increase, if I could, the number of soldiers in the Iraqi army and give them much more, you know, much more control over their own country.
All right, why are we playing this game?
Why are we doing it? I think we just want to have a presence in the Middle East, and we've got to, I think that they think that we have to be there to try to bring knowledge and help the people of the Middle East to see that we can. I think it's more of a globalization issue rather than necessarily. But
all right, and why are we playing Ask Casey?
It's a tough issue. You got to give it. Got to understand. It's a tough issue. Excuse me. What did you say, George?
Why are we playing Ask Casey?
Why are we playing Ask Casey?
That's my question.
Because, I think that if a person, let me just say this, George. I think we all know what's going on here. And I think somebody's got to come in and set the record straight here that there's reasons that certain people are suppressed. And the reason they're suppressed is because they've got answers that certain people are scared of. And now, when I'm talking about Iraq, that's not necessarily my specialty.
But you did a pretty good job there, Casey. I've got some other calls because we don't have a lot of time. But that is our first version of Ask Casey, a regular feature here on Coast to Coast AM. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Karen from Sacramento.
Hey, Karen, what's going on?
Well, I called my representative in Congress office today, one here in Sacramento and one in Washington, and neither one of the offices knew anything about the Security and Prosperity Partnership or the road that's going in from Mexico to Canada?
Well, we're going to be talking about that with Jerry Corsi tomorrow, one of the many issues that he'll address for us. But, you know, it doesn't surprise me.
What kind of surprises me? Is it they really don't know, or are they just giving that line out to people that call?
No, I think they don't know. Who did you end up talking to? Just somebody who answered the phone?
Yeah, just the people in the office.
Yeah, they probably don't know. I would guess and hope the legislators would, but...
But my question was also, I heard that the people that are building the road, Spanish people that are building the road, are using eminent domain to take the property of people of the United States so they can build this road. Is that true?
I think in some cases, cities are getting eminent domain. They're getting the right of way to do what they have to do to build this highway. Now, are they paying people a fair price for their property? Maybe, but is that the case?
Is that
legal? If they're being displaced? Well, in this country, communities do have the right to declare certain areas and they take your property. I mean, it happens all over the place.
But, you know, the United
doesn't make
States,
it right, though.
The United States is not building the road. It's Spain. So isn't it like a foreign country taking eminent domain?
Well, no, it's going to be going right through us, and they're not the only ones building it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, now who's going to own it? I'm going to find out with Jerry Corsi tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay. Wildcard Line, it's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Good evening.
Hello, George. Brian in California.
Hey, Brian.
Oceanside. I think we have about as good a chance of supporting democracy in the Mideast as a snowball's chance in Halliburton.
Yeah.
But anyway, my question was, I don't know if you ever saw the remake of the Twilight Zone series, but they had one episode where a UFO came down and it gave this guy his option whether he wanted to go see the universe and everything it had to offer or just stay on Earth. And he chose just to stay on Earth. And it pulled back, you know, and he kind of realized that he was just going to have his normal humdrum life. Would you take that ride, do you think, or not?
All depends on if I would come back. Would I come back?
Well, I didn't mention that. I'm sorry. That was the caveat that, no, you could not come back.
You could not come back. I've got three grandchildren. I've got three children.
I understand.
I would much rather send Richard Hoagland with a phone and have him report back. That you know, that's a tough call. On one hand, to explore the universe would be one incredible thing to see. But I got to tell you, I love my friends and family, and I don't want to leave them.
No, I understand that. But on the repeat show, you just had a lady called in and said she has a phobia about aliens, which I understand. I mean, I've seen half a dozen craft that I can't explain. And the last thing I do is what Travis Walton did, is to approach it, because I'd just be terrified.
I wouldn't go if I knew for a fact I wasn't coming back.
I got you, but I mean, would you, if you had a chance to even have any contact of a third kind, would you run away?
No, I would not run away. Absolutely not.
If I saw
a saucer in the woods, beaming and glowing, I would do everything I could to approach it. I would not run away. Now, if that means they would beam me dead or beam me aboard, I would take that chance. To me, that's different. That way, it's taken basically my choice out of it. But my curiosity in that part would be too much.
Enjoy your show, George. One of a kind.
Okay, thanks. Next up, let's go to our next wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Is that for me, I guess, huh?
I guess that is.
It's hard to tell. You know, you hear somebody else coming on and...
Well, you should hear... When I go to you, you should hear like a whoosh.
Yeah, I did hear that.
You hear that whoosh.
Yeah. I want to make a comment on a guy that called in, I believe it was last night, about Red Elk, and he said that he speaks to his spirit guide. Well, I talked to... Red Elk once every 3 to 4 weeks. I financially help support his cause for God, and he said that he was full of New Age cow patties because he says his only guide. The guy said that he speaks to Red Elk's spirit guide.
Yeah.
He says his only spirit guide is Almighty Heavenly Father, which is Ekota Chich, I believe it's called, let's see, in India, in his language is Ekota Chichi, which is a great and loving creator.
And how is, you know, I talked to Red Elk a couple months ago on the program. How's he feeling at this point?
He seems to be all right. He said that I said, well, have you been sick? Because I heard that you'd been sick. And he said, a while back or something. But he's fine now, I guess.
Yeah, he said he was getting better on the show. Yeah,
he didn't tell me what was wrong.
I thought it was a circulatory problem.
Oh, that could be.
All right.
That could be because he's diabetic.
That's true. And you know what? You support him partly. That's good. He doesn't have a lot of income coming in right now.
Right. Well, I help him in his cause for what he does spiritually for people.
How much do you have to give him?
And huh?
How much do you have to give him?
I don't have to give him anything.
How much do you give him?
I give him $50 a month.
Well, you know what? It's your money, and if you can afford it, good for you.
Well, it's part of my tithe to the Lord. So, and I know that he's doing a good work.
Makes you feel better?
And he's helping people, and that's what I feel like tithe is for. And it's part of that. And I really didn't want to mention that because it sounds, you know, if he heard that, I don't know that he'd appreciate me
He's been on the program before, and he's told people his financial situation. So he doesn't hide anything.
And
that's what I like about it.
A couple of people, it'd be nice if a lot of people did that for him because he does do a good cause. And he's so full of humor. He's so funny to talk with, and I just spoke to him tonight, and he told me to tell that guy that he was full of New Age Cal Patty.
All right, you got it. Thanks. Let's pick it up by going east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Where are you?
Hey, George. This is John in Houston.
Hey, John.
I just wanted to make a quick comment and then go from there about the director of NOAA or whatever his title is.
The guy who's kind of been pushed out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just think it's funny that all the members are trying to kick him out because he's ruining their credibility. If he's right that the satellite information is skewed or whatever the information is, I just think it's funny that they try to get rid of him.
Well, you know what's amazing, too, is that these people signed a paper, 20 of them, to get him ousted, and that's pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
You know, that's like saying, I don't like my boss. And so all of us, let's quietly band together and go to his boss. And that to me, that sounds like a suicide.
It's like a modern-day mutiny.
Yeah, it does.
I just think it's weird because they're saying their main complaint is that people aren't going to trust the NWS anymore, or NOAA, that, you know, they're not going to believe in them anymore. And if that's true, then why should they get rid of someone who's just telling the truth?
Well, I tell you, last year they said that we were going to have some more devastating hurricanes. And we did not, thank God.
Yeah, thank God. But
it's a tough science, first of all. As much as we have so much devoted to technology, you know, the bottom line is weather predictions are tough, and they're even tougher now because these patterns change all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I flew from LAX to Albuquerque. Man, we were hitting pockets of turbulence that I haven't felt in years. I mean, there's no question the weather is changing. I mean, even up there.
Yeah,
you know, pilots are flying around clouds, and I mean, in the old days, they used to go right through them sometimes.
But not anymore.
Not at all. Thanks for the call. Next up, first-time caller line, your turn. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What city are you in? I always like to know what city people are calling you.
Well, my name is Shay, and I'm from Austin, Texas.
Okay, and I've been there many times.
I know we saw you at the last convention.
Oh, were you there? Good.
Yes. It was fun.
Okay.
And I was calling because I had a comment about the Trans-Texas Corridor and the Superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just heard a lady on the phone. She was saying, isn't it owned by someone else? And you said you'd find out tomorrow night. But as far as the Trans-Texas Corridor goes, they've signed a contract with Cintra, which is a Spanish-owned company.
All right.
Giving
them the right. They're going to operate it, right?
Yes, they're going to operate it and have control over the roads for the next 50 years, and they're going to turn them all into toll roads.
Exactly.
But it is one of the largest eminent domain projects in the history of the United States, or it will be.
And they sold the rights, I think.
They sold the rights to Cintra. Texas is only going to see a fraction of the profits on this, while this Spanish-owned company is going to make millions, maybe billions off of it.
Now, who owns the Spanish company? Do we know who the investors are?
I don't know who the investors are. I know the company is called Cintra. I think it's C-I-N-T-R-A, something like that.
I'd love to find out who is part of that. I wonder if it would surprise us.
But we need to send a message to them that Texas is not for sale. You can't just confiscate the land from our farmers and ranchers and sell it to some corporation. That's the most absurd thing I've ever heard.
Who gave them the right? The Texas government or the feds?
Well, it's the guys in charge of the roads, the Department of Transportation.
If for the state of Texas, I would guess, right?
Rick Williamson, who's they're filing charges against. He's the head of the commission.
Oh, all right. Okay, well, we'll talk with Jerry Corsi about that tomorrow.
Okay, that'll be great.
Let's save it. Call in during one of our sessions with him. Let's go next to West of the Rockies. Hello there.
Hey, George.
Hey.
Hey, I've just got a question for you. I guess pertains to the Roswell.
Sure.
Do you believe that the president, even past presidents and future presidents, do you believe that they, would have the knowledge of Area 51, what it's about, what's inside? Let's say your average Joe.
Not necessarily. They are probably aware of it as a facility. They may have been taken there to see certain things. I'm not sure that they've been told everything or shown everything. I think that there are factions of government that hold things back even from our president.
Right. And, I would think that so, and I would think that they would justify that believing – to protect the president.
Maybe, or to protect themselves.
That's true, that also.
All right, thanks. Let's take one or two more, and that's it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, George.
Yeah,
Yeah, the more of a horrid noise than it was. Anyway, this is Mike from Green Bay.
Yeah.
I was wondering about your Ouija board experiment, that you're doing later this month?
July 25th.
So the 25th?
Yes.
Okay. Are you going in there trying to summon up ghosts, spirits, other dimensional beings, or are you just going with an open mind to see?
No, I'm actually not going to summon up anybody. I'm just going to play with the toy and have Rosemary Ellen Guiley with me, Jordan Maxwell, and a player to be determined. And see what happens. I am convinced that as long as all of us around, me in particular, believe that this is a toy, there will be no evil spirits channeled through that thing.
So it's a matter of intent.
Matter of intent. See, I believe intent. See, if I go in there with the intent of wanting to summon up something, I think I can. And the fact that we're playing with the Ouija board really doesn't mean anything. I mean, we could have a deck of cards there, tarot cards, anything. I think that could work the same way.
So what are you trying to accomplish with this? Just to sort of throw it out there? And
to prove that it's the person, not the Ouija board.
Okay.
So many people are frightened now with the Ouija board, as I thought it was something of evil and danger, too. I really did. And I began to realize that it's the person. I'll talk a little bit about that on the 25th, on what happened to me with my Ouija board experience a long time ago and why I've changed my mind.
So it's all about what sort of energy you're trying to channel at the time you're doing it.
Pretty darn close. In a moment, of course, we are going to be bringing in John Rhodes. He's a crypto hunter and a good one. It's going to be a great program. There are creatures, he believes, living deep below the planet Earth. Well, at least somewhere down there.